Hey everyone, Vito from More Beer. This episode of The Mashup, we're actually at Heretic Brewing in Fairfield, owned by the world famous Jamil Zainashef. We're gonna be talking to head brewer Andrew, who used to work for More Beer, but is now the head brewer here at Heretic. He wants to get back into home brewing, so we're gonna brew a batch of shallow porter here, and then we're gonna homebrew a batch. So let's go in and check it out. Hey Andrew, thanks for having us here.
Welcome.
Awesome place. Tell me, what are you guys brewing today? What are you excited about that you got in the tanks?
We've got a lot of tanks and a lot of beers, and I'm excited about most of our beers. So Make America Juicy Again is one of our biggest sellers.
Yes, yeah.
That's a classic that's in the tank right now. Tangerine Tornado is kind of one of those, not enough people know about it. It's just a great beer. It's high in alcohol, 9% blonde with a lot of tangerine in it. It's one of those silent killers that I always go up to people and I'm like, be careful. It's so smooth and easy to drink. You just have to be very careful with it, but it's really great. It's a really great beer. Easy to drink during the summertime.
Goes down easy, but creeps up on you.
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. So I know you worked at More Beer. We worked together in the showroom.
Yes.
That was awesome. And then you became the head brewer here at Heretic.
Yep.
So here's a question for you. What's something, and I know you were a home brewer before that and you know, working there. What's something that you now would go back and tell homebrewer Andrew that you've learned now from commercial brewers? So what's some tips for a new brewer, essentially?
So it's interesting because there's two different sides of that. Number one, there's the side of me that wants to be like, young, naive Andrew, you need to be a lot more meticulous, make sure fermentation temp is correct, make sure everything's as sanitary as possible, make sure you're taking as much gravity readings as possible, making sure you're as consistent as possible, because I've become this head brewer that is so focused on making sure we have a consistent product for customers because we're shipping all over the world and it's so important. But there's also the flip side of that where the priority that I feel like that's so important as a home brewer is it's a hobby. It's all about having fun. So it's kind of a duality there. Making sure that you're, you know, trying to dial things in, make sure the most important things are obviously fermentation, pitching the right healthy yeasts, making sure you're checking the gravity, adding the right amount of oxygen, etc. But then also just focusing on the fun side of things, you know, brewing weird beers, adding fun new hops, adding new yeast strains, doing things that keep you excited. That's what home brewing's about, you know, hanging out with your friends, drinking beers, learning something new. I mean, it's one of those interesting hobbies that you don't really get to do in most other hobbies, where you just get to hang out, make something fun that you get to drink at the end of it. Is there anything else that you can do like that? I don't think so.
Yeah, it in my opinion, it is the best hobby in the world, right?
Yes.
And speaking of that, what's really cool is, you know, we're brewing, or you guys are brewing Shallow Grave today.
Yep.
We're gonna homebrew Shallow Grave
Yep.
Together on a Brewzilla coming up soon. So looking forward to that. And we'll be able to hang out, have a beer,
Sounds great. Chat
further about that, yeah. So speaking of, distribution and that consistency, I think that's a great, you guys are in 12 different countries, 15, 20 states.
Yeah, because obviously we're in the US, we're especially in Asia. So we're in Thailand, Korea, Japan, Taiwan, a little bit in Europe. So yeah, the consistency, it's not something that's talked about very often, but it's a very important thing. We've got incredibly passionate and intelligent customers, which is fantastic. But we brew Make America Juicy Again every single week here. We brew 4,000 gallons of it at a time. And it's one of those things where if the beer is not the same every single time, not only will I know, but every customer, they won't be able to come grab a Heretic beer from the shelf and think this is gonna be the same every time. And that's so important. So the idea is basically you brew, okay. So when Jamel hired me, I'm sure a lot of you guys know Jamel. When he hired me, he said there's some very important things. And one of the main things is we brew great beer here. To brew good beer, anybody can do that. To brew great beer, it's all of those variables along the way. On the hot side, on the cold side, cellaring, etc. And I have 18 employees here that all have a finger in that final product. So it really truly comes down to doing the same exact process from the very beginning to the very end. And that ties into being a home brewer too. If you want to get meticulous, you want to have consistent beers, which is something I really focused on towards the end of my home brewing. It's taking notes, replicating the same thing that you're doing over and over again, using healthy yeasts, being sanitary, obviously, carbonating at the right carbonation level, etc. And it's all those different things that will give you a consistent beer at the end of it. Same thing here, you know? I won't package a beer unless it is exactly to spec every single time, and I've taught all my employees to do the exact same thing. I consider every single one of my employees a quality control employee, as well as a packaging employee, or a cellaring employee, or a brewer, etc. Everybody has the ability to keep our beer high in quality, or ship out a beer that somebody's not gonna enjoy.
Yeah. What are some, speaking on the packaging side, I remember we were having some beers at the Hop Grenade a couple weeks ago, yeah. And we started talking about that. Ways, especially like with Make America Juicy again, hoppier beers, hazies, things like that. Is there any things you guys are doing differently, or tips even for home brewers? Dissolved oxygen level, obviously, things like that.
Yeah, so it's not something that's talked about in the homebrew community, at least I don't think so. Dissolved oxygen is one of the most important things for your beer long term. You know, obviously if you're drinking it right away, that's not a big deal, but all those hoppy beers, they will stale immediately if you're oxygenating them unnecessarily outside of fermentation. And that comes down to transferring from primary to secondary, filling bottles, filling cans, whatever you guys are doing, minimizing oxygen by purging with CO2, etc. That is probably by far the most important thing that you can do outside of fermenting properly and adding the right amount of yeast. So on our side of things, we've got a dissolved oxygen meter. It's very expensive. I don't expect a home brewer to get that. But it is taking those steps to minimize oxygen pickup. So when you're filling a bottle or a can, use whatever bottle or can filler that you have and make sure you're purging with CO2 as much as possible. A really great way of testing if your oxygen processes are working properly without having a very expensive oxygen meter is you can take a hot water bath. You can put a can or a bottle into that hot water bath for a few minutes or 20 minutes, however long you want. Basically, the idea is to emulate a long-term storage of the can or bottle, and then have a secondary can that was stored properly in a refrigerator or something like that. Try them side by side. A hoppy beer will develop very obvious oxidation notes, things like cardboard. The hops will start to stale and be very obvious in that way. It's just a very simple, cheap way of figuring out, am I having problems in my processes that is causing my beer to stale? Which is important, you know, as a home brewer, if you're giving your beer to friends, you don't want them to try it 3 months down the line, or let's say a week down the line, and it tastes not as great as it did the first day you canned it or bottled it. It's the same thing when you're in a gigantic scale as ours or as a home brewer. It's maybe a little more important to us because we're shipping it to Thailand, let's say, but the same thing applies to a home brewer.
One of the, my early memories of Heretic is the 22-ounce bombers, you know, and I see you guys still do that, but I'm interested, what percentage of you guys, now cans, aluminum, canning beer, even homebrewers are able to can now, so it's, yep. It's becoming more accessible, it's also more prevalent in the market. I'm just interested, what percentage of your packaged beer goes into bottles versus cans, and maybe elaborate on that a little.
Sure. So I've been here since 2013, I've seen this progression. From the beginning, we weren't canning because canning was not a thing as a craft brewery. Then we started to can, and we went from doing a large amount of 22-ounce bottle cases, and that slowly started getting smaller and smaller to the point that now we don't do as much. You know, it's probably 3-5% of our packaging goes into bottles. The main idea is there's still a lot of supermarkets, and there's still a lot of customers that do enjoy that big, you know, model of bottles. I personally have been very excited that we moved over to cans. In a lot of ways, they're just the perfect package. You basically, shipping them, it's not as heavy. They seal a lot better. Obviously, light does not go through them as easily. And so all those things add up to just a more stable package. So overall, It's up to you what you want to purchase, but I love the new can model. I'm very happy that we've moved towards that.
I'm with you too, and it's interesting. You know, when I first got into to craft beer in the late 90s, you know, I always thought of cans as this negative, oh, that's big macro beer, you know, and, yes. And good beers in glass, you know, that was, but now I'm totally with you. I've learned the ways that it's a superior package, you know, from all the things you said.
It was one of those things where I was convinced it was never going to happen, that we were never going to make that transition over because there's this stigma, or there used to be this stigma, yeah. where it was like Miller Coors or whatever it may be, comes in those cans, and therefore new small independent craft breweries can't make cans. That's not allowed. But it just started to happen. Everybody made the decision actively as a group, and it's been incredible. So I'm so thankful that we've moved over from bottles to cans, to the point that, because it all comes down to people grabbing it from the supermarket for us. And so the fact that they can grab a can, open it up, they don't have to worry about any flavor contributions from the cans. It's great.
Speaking of now, you know, so we've brought up big beer and the Miller, the Coors, the Budweisers.
Sure.
I think one of the things, let me know why a couple blocks miles away we've got Budweiser, one of their major West Coast breweries over there, and I believe that is one of the reason you guys chose this location is the water, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Can you elaborate on that a little?
Sure. Okay. So I wasn't here when they bought this facility. I came in, that was towards the beginning of 2013. I came in at the end of 2013. So I don't know all the reasons for that, but yes, it was the water. It was also when you're opening up a production facility this size, it all comes down to the money. So making sure the price is right. So it was just all those variables, the water, the city of Fairfield has been incredible with us. Having support from a city when you're opening up a brewery is the most important thing. If you're dealing with constant issues with the city asking for permits, et cetera, that's just a no-go. So all three of those things made it so we've had this perfect relationship with Fairfield and the water and producing just great beer here.
Speaking of great beer, and great brewers, yourself in that, but Jamil, tell us, I mean, he's in the home brewing circuit, they call him the Pope, you know, he's won a medal in every single category in home brewing.
Yes.
So my question is, what is it like working for such a big name, big, you know, body within the brewing industry?
I'm sure anybody that works with a celebrity would describe it as the same thing. He's just the person that I work for. You know, he's just a guy that I love working with, has given me so much information. The brewer I am today is because of him. And he's just a guy. You know, it's easy to forget that and to go to like a conference or a festival where people come here to the brewery and they're so excited to meet him because he's influenced so many people with his books and obviously his home brewing and his podcasts. And it's easy to forget about that. But he's just this nice guy that I've been working for almost 10 years now, and I've learned from. And at the end of the day, he's just a person that I like to be around and I like to talk with. And it's very easy to forget that he is a celebrity. And I don't know, he's just a great guy. And everybody kind of knows that from the podcast when they listen to it and from his books. But I get the opportunity to work with him and learn from him, so.
That's awesome, yeah.
Yeah.
Cheers to Jamil.
Yeah, to Jamil.
So I know you guys, you make a lot of amazing beers, seltzers even. We'll go into that in a minute. What is your favorite Heretic brew? Mine's Evil Twin. I love that hoppy red. What's your favorite Heretic brew, and what would you want the public to know you guys for?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Okay. So the whole, what is your favorite beer question?
Your favorite, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I get that question a lot. It's kind of like, what's your favorite movie? You know, it depends on the time. It depends on what mood I'm in for. If I'm in the mood for an IPA, which happens, we have a California IPA, which is just a single hop West Coast IPA. That's just great, drinkable. It's got really good hop character. I like to drink that a lot. If I'm in the mood for a darker beer, I love black lagers, and we have a Schwartz beer that's kind of taproom only that
yes,
I do drink
Schwartz,
quite
yeah.
a lot. our lager, our Munich Helles, is fantastic. It's, you know, been given a lot of compliments by a lot of people, and I'm really excited to see people that love that beer. And then we've got our hazy IPAs. I'm not as big a hazy IPA fan, but Make America Juicy, again, is very approachable. It's one of those things that I get this compliment and I love to hear it, that a person that doesn't like beer is drinking beer because of Make America Juicy again. There's nothing better than that. Like, I just want people to enjoy beer and to hear that there's a beer that's approachable enough and that doesn't have like a bitterness to it to the point that it's pushing these people away.
I'm glad you mentioned Make America Juicy again. Yep. And hazies in general. I think that's, hazies were awesome because it brought a lot of people that weren't, you know, into bitter beer into the fold. But Make America Juicy again specifically, I hear from what I call like the old timers, you know, the old homebrewers, old brewers, that aren't really into hazy beers, but they love that beer in particular. Because I think it's a good balance of like, there is some hop character, you know, it's not as cloyingly sweet as some of these hazies you see out there. It's kind of dry, you know,
yes.
So it's a good, you know, kind of plays between the lines there.
Yes, it's one of those things where you mentioned seltzers. I brew beers that are not necessarily my favorite. I brew beers that I want that are popular, and I will brew them to the best of my ability. And Make America Juicy again is a great example of that. A lot of the hazy IPAs, like you said, are way too sweet. Make America Juicy again is got a lot of great hop character. It's on the drier side, and so those hops really pop. And so there's no bitterness. There's just a lot of great hop character, a lot of tropical fruity notes. And so really anybody is gonna love that beer. And that's what makes it so great, is it's just easy to drink. You can have two or three of them with no problem. It's 6.5% and the alcohol is non-existent. And so that's the challenge always, is how do you make whatever the style that's gonna sell as good as possible? And never assuming that that is the final point. Continuing to improve upon the beer every year that happens.
I love that, continuous improvement, because like as a brewer, and especially as a commercial brewer, I'd hate to get in that point of, we're doing this thing again, you know? It's I love that like innovation and creativity, right? That's,
yes.
You know, that's what's fun.
Honestly, that's what's both exciting and scary with the beer industry right now, the craft beer industry. I have no idea what's gonna happen in a year or two, because it's just all over the place. The craft beer industry, I don't know what the next new style is gonna be. And that's kind of the excitement of it, is I'm ready to roll. I'll brew something new and I'll brew it to the best of my ability. If it's a seltzer, why do I care? I'm going to brew a great seltzer, which we did. We have a raspberry seltzer that is delicious with fresh raspberry puree. If it's some other beer, that is the beer industry. We have to constantly innovate and constantly improve upon our recipes with whatever new hops are available to us or new yeast. The idea that you should stay the same with any beer to me is crazy.
I love that, and I'm so with that. Yeah, because I when hazies came out, a lot of people, forget that. It's lazy. It's easy. And then once you dig in, you're like, no, it's not. It's actually, you know, there's a lot going on with the water and things like that.
All right,
let's jump into the seltzers, though.
Yes,
sorry,
yes, let's do it.
We're talking seltzers. So,
yep.
I know More Beer. We have seltzer kit,
yes.
And Colin Kamitsky, who did the water book, he's the one who developed those, but I know who we talked to figure out how to make good seltzers, and it was you.
Yeah.
So tell us some tips on making seltzers, things that you taught Colin that went into our seltzers, you know, that came from your guys' seltzer program.
It took a while. That was the main thing, is it was a new thing for me. When I was at More Beer, you guys gave me the opportunity to do wine, cider, beer,
mead.
Of all different styles, mead. I made an incredible Mellow Mel with like blackberry and apricot. And seltzer was no different. It just all comes down to testing things. If you're trying a new style of beer or a cider or whatever it may be, why not just try it 5 different ways? So it really came down to, it took me about 6 months to really dial in the process, because there's no malt in the wort that you're creating. So you have issues with pH, so you really have to add the proper nutrients, you have to use the right yeasts, you have to give it the right amount of oxygen, you have to give it nutrients throughout fermentation, and it really comes down to just trial and error. You know, split 5 gallons into five different, you know, 1 gallon batches, add different yeasts, find out which yeast you like, try different sugars, whether you're using cane sugar, dextrose, whatever it may be. Try, you know, it's, I've heard so many different options for doing things, and that's the beauty of the beer industry is there's no one way to do it. I've had 20 different seltzers that I've loved for different reasons, and there's, yeah, you can use extracts for the flavor, you can use purees, you can use a combination of puree and extract. So yeah, it's just keep trying. That's, I guess that's my main solution, is make sure fermentation goes well, use the right yeasts, add the right nutrients. Make sure you've got a buffer for the pH. The pH is gonna drop down to way too low if you're not buffering the pH properly.
Then fermentation will stall because of that.
Fermentation will stall.
Yeah.
And then you've got a half fermented seltzer.
Yeah.
It's an easy but a hard thing to do. So just keep at it. You'll figure it out.
That's a apply scientific method, it sounds like, right? Yeah.
That's how you should do it for everything.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
That's why I mentioned mead too. I think the big thing is it's very similar to mead in the fact that the nitrogen levels and things like that are not there from the grain, the yes. fan level. So you need to supplement it with nutrients.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Water chemistry becomes very important.
Yeah. Yeah. It's those. You know, we talk about seltzers, but that's another one that's tricky. And you know,
it gets a bad rap. But yeah. It's like the hazy IPAs. I know they get made fun of sometimes. That took us a long time to dial in the process. That took us like a year to perfect the recipe. And I'm sure people are struggling with that as well. It's not an easy process. So, yeah.
So, all right, going on to that, and you kind of touched on it. What do you think the next big trend style is in beer? You know, cold IPA is kind of big right now. You know, we've had things like that. Is it, you know, where do you see the beer industry going, you know? What is the next big trend? If we knew it, we'd probably brew it, right?
So that's the
deal. What do you think? Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think we obviously went from West Coast over to the hazy IPAs. We're definitely trending kind of back towards the West Coast, or kind of a hybrid of the two. So that's definitely going to be the thing, is tropical IPAs or IPAs that are maybe not as bitter as West Coast, but definitely more on the tropical fruity side. Those are going to be around for a long time. Cold IPAs, maybe. Lagers are definitely going to come back a little bit. Yeah, it's a good question. I'm still trying to figure it out. It's people love their hops. They love their fruity stuff and the tropical fruity notes from the hops. So it's just going to be a lot of experimental hop, you know, ingredients. Like I just did something with Phantasm with just like a thiol powder.
Oh yes. Okay.
That's taken you know, it's tannins from barrels.
Yep.
There's all these different specialty genetically modified yeast that provide fruity characters to the beer. There's all these different hops, like pourable hops. So I think you'll see a lot of experimentation with different hops and different yeast to create super fruity, super hoppy beers. IPAs are not going away. That's the deal. You look at the top, you know, 100 list of the best-selling beers, most of them are IPAs. So that's here to stay, and I'm excited for it. So
hops is a brewer's favorite ingredient, and I think beer drinker's favorite ingredient too.
Yes.
So on that note, what is a hop that you love, new or old, that you feel maybe not be getting as much light? You know, what's a sleeper hop that people are like, man, that Belma's killer, but you know, I don't know, yeah, something like that.
I like Cashmere.
I'm with you on that. I love Cashmere.
It's a hop that's not, I mean, I'm sure it's used, but it's not talked about a lot. Cashmere is a good supporting hop. Azaka's nice as well. Amarillo, it's an old hop, but I love dry hopping with Amarillo.
Yeah, big grapefruit notes. Yeah, that's a good one.
You know, there's always the classics. I like a lot of the like Columbus and Apollo and Simcoe. It just depends what what mood I'm in for.
So right. Like Mosaic, yeah, it's like the style of Mosaic.
It's like Mosaic is amazing. Nobody's going to disagree with that. Mosaic is great in every beer it's in. It takes over. So you have to support it with other hops.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Andrew, thanks for taking time to sit down with us. Let's go tour the facility, check out the shallow grave that we're commercially brewing today, and then let's cut on over to us home brewing.
Sounds good.
All right, Andrew, we brewed at Heretic. Now we're brewing on a Brewzilla. We're doing the shallow grave porter. So check it out on a future episode.
Let's do it.